Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Lawrence?
Yeah, get a little chainsaw into his hands and stick him on some zombies and we'll see what happens.
The curtain rises on the scene with someone chanting to be free. It unfolds before my eyes. This ends the actor who is me.
I fucking hate him!
The sleeping hours take us far.
David said what? Tell me what he said!
Put out your problems with the cat. Escape until the
value. I'm so sick of superheroes, Dad.
Hey, and welcome back to the Brotherhood of Batman. I'm Aaron. I'm the oldest out of us. I produce this mess. Thanks for tuning back in.
I'm Ben, your sunshine to Gotham, and I just so happen to be the youngest of the three.
And I'm Jake, I'm the middle brother. I'm the one that came up with the crazy list of comics that we read through each week here on the Brotherhood of Batman, a podcast where three brothers get together, read comic books in a weird order that I came up with, and talk about Batman, DC, and anything nerdy that we feel like that week. Welcome back, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, good. How's everything going with you guys?
It's great.
What's been going on in your geeky little worlds?
Stop talking about comic books or
what
I'll
do you think you're doing,
you.
Nerd?
Stop spending.
Get those
cash.
Words!
Nerd!
Nerd!
Or I swear to God,
geek.
You're gonna spend your 20
geek.
Years alone.
Geek.
I mean, I'm the Batman of geeks, bitch.
Ben?
So I got you guys to watch a season of The Traitors.
Yes.
Yeah.
A bit ago. Josh and I just watched another season. And
yeah, which one?
I'm going to spoil it, so I will say. So it is UK 2. So it is on Peacock.
Okay.
It has my favorite traitor.
Nice.
Of anyone who has been a traitor in any of the 5 seasons I've watched, this person, in my opinion, does the best job.
Nice.
It is, yeah, I messaged your wife, Jake, who could barely get through Australia 1 without her anxiety.
Yeah, we haven't watched anymore.
She said she will never watch them. So I was like, do not ever watch this season. You will hate this person. You will be so upset at the end. I'm pretty heartless when it comes to reality TV. And I was like worried for the last faithful. I was like, oh, she's going to be upset. Like it was really
oh,
good.
Oh, now I need to watch it.
It was really good.
Watching people's hope and dreams get crushed at the last moment is one of my favorite things.
Well, and when people, it's a game and you guys play games. So like,
yeah.
you don't hate someone for life because they beat you in chess. Like, I respect people who play the game, and these traitors don't even choose. Like, they get picked mm-hmm. blindly, so yeah. You have to do it, but these people take it so personally, and they're like, you betrayed us. I'm like, no, bitch, they played
no,
the
it's
part.
It's a game. You're there to make money. If you're making friends, that's your own stupidity. I'm sorry.
I think
you're
you can
there
do
to
both.
Well, agreed, but the way you play the game is by manipulating people,
right.
Getting them to open up and drop their guard, and then right. taking advantage of them.
But 100%. It's not personal.
It's
except
not,
you have to exploit the personality.
Yeah, to do it correctly, you exploit them on their personal merit.
They signed up. If they didn't want to sign up and play,
I would be excellent at the game because I will manipulate the shit out of anybody. I don't care.
Wow. But yeah, Aaron, if I know you enjoyed Australia season 1. UK 2, I enjoyed. It's not necessarily the most fun throughout, but it has my favorite traitor. So.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, so that's what we've been up to. And then we've just been watching. We started Love is Blind. Did your wife watch that, Aaron? I feel
is
like your wife would watch that.
Is that where the two people are talking between walls?
Yeah.
And then they see each other and then they decide, you know what, I don't really like your ugly ass.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Or they're like, we like you enough and we're going to get married. You watch a lot. It's like you see them
I think
date
she did watch
between.
Some of it.
She definitely would have.
Sure she has.
they date between this wall and then they only get to see each other face to face once they've proposed.
What?
It is trashy.
Oh, it's so.
But supposedly,
it's to get beyond the materialistic and appearances, Jake.
No, some of these people are horrible, but some of them are great. So
horrible
like,
looking, Ben. Jeez.
No, they're
ugly shaming now.
The season we watched were all like cute to average people. There was no like
fugly.
They needed to put a hideous monster in
I'm
there.
Sure some seasons
Fubar.
Do. Fubar. Oh.
Fucked up beyond all recognition.
Oh, I thought it was a fucking ugly bitch. Ass.
Raccoon.
Big yeah.
Raccoon.
It is now.
Fucking ugly big ass raccoon.
Anyway, so we've just been watching reality TV, and that's all we've been up to, really. So
nice. Jake?
Yeah, so we're working on a moving project that's coming up. Part of that was I needed to get my comics in order that have been just stockpiling in my office that haven't been bag and board. Well, they're bag.
Wait,
and board.
I'm going to stop you there. Yeah. Are you saying that the entirety of what's going to be happening in your life and your family's life is because of your comics?
No.
Is that what I'm hearing?
No. We're going to be moving most likely, and so I have a giant stack of comics in my room that has not been cataloged and put away correctly.
Jake, you're not making it better. You're clarifying Aaron's question.
I keep hearing that you're moving because you need more space.
So you're moving because you have too many comic books?
No. We are moving, period. I also have a giant stack of comics in my office.
So you're moving because you have a giant stack of comics in your office?
We are moving, period. There is a giant stack of comics in my office prior to the move that needs to be cataloged.
Before, so you can move.
So
the way the English language works, you don't use a period there. You use a because. And maybe a comma, but I get confused on those.
So
you have comics you need to catalog.
Yeah, and my wonderful, understanding, very supportive wife.
To understand.
She had to run an errand in, I think it was coming maybe to see you or
it
something.
It was coming to get these damn books for you because you didn't get them.
That was this morning. Or that was last night. She went to our comic store and picked up my pole.
Oh, I saw that pole. There was a lot in there.
She's like,
he kept
how
stacking.
Did that go?
Jake's.
Oh.
Aaron. Jake.
The regular Jake. Comic store, the not the trades. Oh, not you would have let her go to that one. General listeners, he is very quickly shaking his head.
So she went and got my Spawn and Batman books that have been sitting for far too long. I apologize, Dave.
I love Dave.
But it took me a whole freaking night. There were overall, not that she just picked up, but the combination of those books and the books in my office that had not been cataloged yet, it took a whole pack of bags and boards to get them ready. Like, that's over 100 books.
If you
like,
have any more bags and boards, I could use some. I literally just ran out. That'd be great.
But my Spawn is
so
all
up to
date
now. So do you also put
now.
Them into your digital? Like,
yeah. So
okay.
That's what took a whole night.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they had to be sorted into the boxes and all that kind of stuff.
So I obviously don't buy as many at a time as you do. But if I'm going to a store and I just pick up, you know, between 2 and 10 books, I will put them into the catalog app, CLZ. I will put them there in the store because otherwise I get confused or forget. So, like, I'll do it as I'm, like, at the counter or, like, over in the corner, like, stacking things up.
Which is fair, but, like,
I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying that's what I do.
My series are so consistent. Like, I just get the next 2 issues of the next book, right? Like, it's only Spawn. It's only Batman. That's all. I don't go outside of that. So,
yeah. If I'm going, like, on a comic run, I will probably enter them in CLZ at each store.
I'll do that live.
Because I'm looking for older things or stupid stuff that I'm going to make you read next week.
Well, and I've done that.
Lobo?
Not kept a live inventory while we were at like a con and bought the same book twice.
Oh, multiple cons. Yeah, you've done that. I've done that. It's
frustrating as hell. You get in the car and you're like, damn it, I bought 2 Daredevils.
I like our modern comic runs, the last couple we've done, because I get out of driving and whichever of you drives me around, I'm like listening to you and go, uh-huh, as I'm cataloging.
I'm excited. I've got a list ready for the next one. So some new places we haven't been yet.
Ooh. Oh,
nice.
Nice. Summer maybe?
I think summertime's a good time.
Great. Well, I'm not going on vacation for a while.
Yeah. I'm not going to have money for a while, so... Somebody's going to drive me around this time. Yeah.
Because of your stack of comic books.
Because I have to move because I have too many comic books.
Aaron?
What have I been doing? Not a whole lot. Show-wise, I've been watching this Formula One Drive to Survive Kelly and Toby had watched. I don't know if I mentioned it or not.
Sounds it's familiar.
It's a docuseries on F1 racing. And it it's you might actually like it. Kelly likes it. And she's not a race car person, but it's all about the personalities and the drivers and the principals who are like basically they run the teams and make the decisions. And it's follows them from race to race.
You said
and
it's all a docuseries.
It's a docuseries. There's 6 seasons. It's on Netflix. Mm. And it follows each season is a season of the racing, like the racing seasons. But it follows like the different teams, the different drivers, and you can see like the same courses. They do the same kind of courses every year, with some changes and stuff. But it's pretty interesting. You get to kind of see how drivers will go from one team to the next and change based on contracts, or it's some of the teams are only meant to compete in the middle of the pack because they don't have the funds that some of the other bigger ones have. Mm-hmm. And they're you have fillers. To build the team. You have to build the car every year. So it's not like Ferrari can take their car that they had last year and use that same car this year. They have to start over. And so that it has a driver's championship and then a constructor championship, which is like the actual teams designing the cars and tweaking it and making refinements. If you see like crashes in those races, like during the race, they take that car and they have to repair it before they can use it again. So it's not like they get a brand new car, but it costs about $500,000 to $1 million to repair and get the next car, get the car ready for the next race. Sometimes that's happening in like the qualifying the day before where the teams may have to spend the entirety of the night fixing the car and getting it ready to actually run in the race. So it's pretty interesting. And there's a lot of really interesting personalities in there, but they're real people, obviously. So, you know, you're following that and you can see it in real time and how people are moving. So
what's it called?
It's Formula One Drive to Survive.
Drive to Survive.
Yeah, are you watching ones that Kelly and Toby have already watched?
We got finished, like, they had watched the first 5 seasons, and so I just finished and caught up with them because they had started, and I was like, well, if I'm going to watch it, I'm going to watch from the beginning of when it came out so that I can follow it. And then we're on like episode 3 maybe of the newest season that just came out. So we're watching that one all together. Connor's not super into it, but he's kind of hanging out with us. But it's interesting right now. Red Bull is got the best team, and they've had that for the last few years with their
driver. Cars have wings?
Sometimes it looks like it. They're flying, but
nice.
Yeah, it's fun.
Very cool. Noah's gotten really into racing, so I'm going to ask him if he has watched that.
Yeah.
I feel like you should ask our uncle if he's watched that. I feel like he would be into that.
Yeah, he probably would be into it. I don't know if he has or not. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. How about you, Jake? You did their house. Your comics.
His stack of comic books. Yeah. He didn't get the reality TV memo.
No. Yeah. No, he didn't.
Should we talk about these books?
Yeah. What did we read?
So this week, where's my little tightener thing? We read Detective Comics 777 through 782. The Dead Reckoning storyline out of those issues. So in the story, we have...
Wait, we weren't supposed to read the backup story? I didn't. I'm kidding.
I didn't read that one either.
Okay, good. Yeah. I thought I told you guys not to. And then when it got to it, I'm like...
Oh, you definitely didn't. I just decided that I was not doing that. Oh, and same. I figured we weren't supposed to.
I was like, I ain't reading this.
So it is just the first...
Spoiler!
The Dead Reckoning storyline out of those. So in this story, a group of Batman's Rogues Gallery have teamed up together at some point in the past and are now being hunted down systematically one by one, and it somehow also involves Batman. So it is the mystery and the detective work to figure out who has a grudge against them all and why are they going after and will any or all of them survive.
I have so many thoughts.
Yeah.
Before you
first,
have anything negative to say, can we all agree that the covers on all these issues were absolutely beautiful and they were done by Tim Sale?
I mean, they're fine.
I don't remember the covers.
Oh, God, I hate you both.
Oh, I was kidding. Just Jake, they're very beautiful.
Unlike Jake, who read it like 4 minutes ago, I read it like a month ago. So
I read it.
This is like one of his favorite artists.
Oh, I do like Sale. Yeah. I do remember from seeing them that they were nice.
It's so good. It's so good.
Tim Sale, more like the books are on sale because they suck. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. No, I was excited. It was a little mystery. I always love a good smattering of rogues and actual costume characters. I did have a couple questions and a couple concerns.
Yeah.
My first question / thing that annoyed me was, this is like right after Hush, right?
No. This is coming out while Hush is coming out.
Okay, well then
This is February.
I don't like this because it doesn't work at the same time as Hush does, because Harvey is scarred and in jail.
Yeah, they kind of just brushed over the whole Harvey being scarred up in this, right?
So
is that, or am I thinking something?
No, you're right. He's scarred in this, but in Hush he gets healed and doesn't have the scars.
They don't have that. They kind of just brush over the whole healed thing.
Which, guys, is exactly why this is in the timeline, because this Hush, Catwoman Relentless, and Gotham Central Volume 1 are all coming out simultaneously. They're all on the racks together.
Editorial fucked up. Or you should have had us read this before Hush, but knew that I wouldn't because I was desperate to get to it.
So it's actually, although Hush is now looked back on as such a monumental Batman story and is hinted back to for continuity, Hush, I think we talked about when we reviewed that, was done out of the timeline of the rest of the Batman books when it was produced.
So they intentionally weren't trying to make it work.
They were intentionally telling a story that wasn't dependent on what was happening around them.
Okay.
A concern I have is, I don't dislike the art, but I didn't feel like the art was necessarily what it needed to be for this big of a story with this many characters.
Agreed.
The art felt... It felt a little like the animated series nod, but I would have liked it more if it was just flat out the animated series.
I found a couple spots that there was too much like saturation of one color that made it very difficult to figure out what was happening.
Yeah.
There's like a couple pages of like all yellow, and I was like, I don't know what's going on here. It's not clear enough.
I did not think that the art was bad, but I agree with you both. I don't think it was nearly as strong as a multi-rogue crossover miniseries or maxi-series, whatever you want to call it. Like, if you had had somebody like Rick Burchett like do it in the animation style, or if you had had more toning in the color, I think some of that would have read a little bit better, because they were trying to build a pretty big story here. Like, it involves Joker, Penguin, Catwoman, Two-Face, Riddler, Mad Hatter, Scarecrow.
Killer Moth. Sort of. So you mentioned Mini Maxi, but it is in Batman Detective Comics. It's what I thought was kind of cool is that, so it's 6 issues, and you say it's happening the same as time as Hush. I'll just believe you. Hush was in the Batman book. So what was cool about Hush for me was that it was all by the same team. Like, there was no jumping around. It was no Batman and then Detective and then Legends and then whatever other Batman series were going on. It was all Batman. So this one was all Detective as one solid story. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was cool. And I wonder how often the Batman series really did that, where they didn't cross over at this time period, because so much of what we've read, No Man's Land, Nightfall, Night Quest, all that stuff was jumping around between all of them. So I was like, oh, we are at a point in comics where they're starting to be like, no, Detective is going to be its own ongoing story. Batman's going to be its own ongoing story. So I thought that was really interesting.
Hush was all Batman issues.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah.
You're right. So, and in their own title, they often only get like 2, maybe 3 issues that are really consecutive and are telling a little story. To have 6, or like Hush with 12, that is a very different change in pace, I think, from what we've had recently, for sure.
Right. No, and I'm trying to think of like a lot of the collected works that we've read have been, you know, 4 or 5 from one title and 2 or 3 from another, and then one random half a page on something, you know?
Birds of Prey. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. I just thought it was so fascinating. I did not know about this story until I was doing all the research into the timeline and putting it together. This was my first time reading all this. And then when I was going back afterwards and doing some follow-up research on the character, the big character that's introduced in this, or introduced and then is not ever used again. The character that ends up being the antagonist of the story, researching that, I had come across that research before about that character, not knowing about this story because of their...
Talking about Sloane, right?
Sloane. Paul Sloane is in this story. The Rogues try to get Two-Face in on this job they want to pull.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want to do it because the coin tells him not to.
In the past. Right. This is all the past story.
In the past. And so they have the idea to hire an actor to pretend to be Two-Face.
And I was really disappointed that it wasn't Clayface. I was really hoping that it was a Clayface story when it was the actor and they're not sure who's leading things. I was like, this would be a great Clayface story.
Yeah, and we've had him recently, right? Like, you would have just another good member of the...
In Hush.
Yeah, he was in Hush.
He's working hard right now, apparently. Yeah. No, I agree.
I didn't
Aaron.
Know this was consecutive while Hush was going on, so that's why I was like, oh, this would have been a
Clayface. No, I agree. I would have actually, Clayface here would have been, I think, better than how they used him in Hush. I think his usage there was one of the weaker characters they used in Hush. I get why they did it, and it was needed for the big dramatic Jason Todd moment, but that would have been cool if that was actually what this was. And I also, reading this, I didn't look at the dates. I fully thought it was after Hush, which is why I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I didn't look at the dates either. And so, Jake, the Paul Sloane guy, this is his first appearance?
So it is post-crisis.
Okay.
So pre-crisis, Paul Sloane is a very... Two-Face was hardly used in the Silver Age because of...
What about the Bronze Age?
He came back in the Bronze Age. But he was hardly used in the Silver Age because of the comics code, and he was too monstrous for them to use.
Seriously?
Yeah. But in the Golden Age, Harvey Dent was much more of a traumatic character. He didn't want to be bad, and it was the bad side that would come out of him. Mm. Paul Sloane was actually Two-Face number 3, who was an actor... Who was paid to play Harvey Dent in a biopic movie that they were making.
Oh.
And one of the props guys changed the fake acid for real acid. And he got scarred and it drove him crazy. And he was Two-Face for an issue. And then I think he dies at the end of the issue.
So that's kind of a fun callback here then.
I thought it was. And I didn't realize that when I had been doing all this research into Two-Face way back when, like... When we were doing early year one stuff, I was like, okay, well, what Golden Age, what Silver Age stories should we hit on for these characters? I came across that Paul Sloane research, and I'm like, I don't know where we're going to talk about that. I'll just skip over it. And so I was reading the same articles this time. This version of Paul Sloane is never used again, though.
So you said back to the Silver Age, you said Two-Face was too grotesque to be in the comics and that. Would they have taken Danny DeVito's Penguin character out of that?
Maybe.
I don't know.
The Silver Age was very silly. Yeah. Okay. Penguin was definitely more of the umbrella-ish villain.
He's an animal.
He gets hung here.
Yeah, he does.
That was intense.
Yeah, I wrote down Penguin killed. Nah. But
yeah, I was like, he's not gonna be.
No, he's not gonna die. Batman's trying to like hoist him up to cut the rope down and save him.
Which
I like how it ended. With that at the end of an issue.
Well, and then he's gone as a comic reader, you know he's not dead, but like he's out of the book for like 2 issues before they show that they have him in police protective custody and he's hiding out so that he's not targeted again.
So the like calling card of this person coming after these rogues people was the like two-sided scratched coin. I thought that was intriguing. That was an early thing that had me like, oh, I actually am invested in this. And I like the forensic work they did of like, you know, Harvey's coins are all scratched the exact same way. They're really meticulous. And this is a little more sloppy. It's not quite the same. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a nice callback to something like Long Halloween, where the villains start to fear another villain more than they fear Batman.
Yeah.
They're willing to even look for his help at some points because what's coming for them could be worse. And they know Batman's not going to kill him, but this guy might. So
did they Do they remember? I'm trying to remember. It's been a long time. Did they know that it was Sloane after them, or they took a little bit for them to figure it out?
I think after the... So the killer moth in this is not the original killer moth, although it was the original killer moth in the flashbacks.
Right.
Okay.
So there's a new one that gets released out of prison, and he finds a suit, and then Sloane kills this guy. And he leaves a coin at the crime scene there. And then I think after the first coin, the next person who gets a coin starts to put it together.
Okay.
Yeah, I interpreted it that they knew what was going on. We as an audience just didn't know yet.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or at least they suspected they were being hunted.
I would think they would know who was after them if they all knew that they were like, oh, we all are in this together, and this does not seem like a Harvey's motive. And
when I obviously, I'm a huge Two-Face fanboy, but I love that, like, he's introduced at his part of it, and then he's written out of it for a little while, and Batman's like, well, I need to go talk to Harvey. He obviously has something to do with this, and you find out that when Sloane, in this version, took over the Two-Face identity for the Rogues, he's a method actor, so he went as far as like pulling a heist that wasn't part of their plan as Two-Face, and Two-Face took that personally and completely fucked him up. Like, we're getting into this weird era of Batman where it's like torture porn, and like he tortures the shit out of this guy, cuts his face off, like horrible things to this person.
Yeah, it wasn't a good move to try to take over Harvey's total persona. Yeah.
No, he's very particular about his shtick, and he can't be messed with.
There doesn't need to be two of him, is what we're saying.
I mean, there should be, really, but then it gets into four, and that's confusing.
Yeah, no, that's too much math.
Too much. Something that I had trouble with reading in this.
The words?
Yeah. It was 2000.
Words hard.
What? It's 2003, so I was in high school. I obviously never touched this book until now. But putting myself in, like, where this book was, or, like, where the real world was when this book came out, and where it is now, there's, like, a school shooting moment that I did not love. And very much, like, the early stages of it, like, Columbine with, like, the black trench coat, greasy hair. And we find out that it's the guy wearing, like, a mask to look like a teen, or was it a college class Gordon was teaching?
Gordon's
subbing in for a college class, or he's doing something, and I saw it coming before it happened. I was like, ooh, don't love this, anxious about this. So I found that really interesting. I don't know. Something I've enjoyed about the podcast is looking back at like what was going on in the real world when these things were written. Mm-hmm. Like, we had that Young Justice book a long time ago about, you know, Arrowette's going into the school because her counselor got shot and all this stuff. And so it's just really interesting to think about the choices and like if they would do that today. Because today that's a real life thing that's like even more common now, like so common that like people might not even know when they happen anymore. And so it's like, would it get by now? Or would they be like, oh, that's too sensitive, but we're not talking about the real ones that are happening?
I didn't really, like, when Gordon was in there, I was like, oh, they brought Gordon back. This is how they're reintroducing him. They had him in a little bit of the Gotham Central, but not a whole lot, and he'd been gone for a while. So I was like, okay, they're getting into a professor role. This is how they're bringing him back. I didn't even think about the school shooting aspect of it at all.
Which is really interesting, because you're a teacher.
Yeah, I really I really try to dissociate from any of that while I'm reading, and
totally fair.
You know, it's interesting. Your point's interesting. I just didn't think about that at all.
I really try to put myself like where I was when these books came out, and I was in high school, and like I also in college I directed a play about the Columbine shooting incident, and so like I'm very hyper aware of that, and like my job now is more or less a traveling teacher, and so that's something like when I go into schools I like look for, because I don't deal with it every single day. I don't know, I'm being very serious. It was a shocking, like I wasn't expecting it here, and no one died, and it was, you know, it's a comic book, but it was just a moment of seeing the like stereotype of the like black trench coat, greasy hair kind of situation where I was like, damn, like this is intense for me for a comic book.
When was this written?
2003.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't want to assume that I know what the writer was going for here. I think what it does do, though, at least what I was going through while reading that issue, was it demonstrates, like, so Gordon is shot at. He hits the deck behind a desk, but his first and foremost thought is to keep others safe.
Yeah.
So he's trying to usher the students out of the room before he even confronts the villain.
He goes back in cop mode, which is great.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was definitely a good display of you can take the person out of the cop role, but you can't take the cop out of the person, right? Mm-hmm. Like it shows us that Jim is still, he's walking around on a cane, but he's able to disarm this guy and he, you know, beats him up and all that. I thought it was a good return for Jim. I did not have the same
reaction.
Thank you.
It was just surprising. It was just surprising. Because especially for me, like, what I love about Batman, a thing I love about Batman stories I've talked about a lot is the, like, costumed villains. And in, like, a costume villain story, you don't expect that.
Sure. No, I don't think so. And a lot of it, you know, some of these writers want to be shocking. Some of them want to be topical. Some of them want it to feel like the real world. And sometimes that is a fine line to walk. Like, you can push it too close to the real world to make people uncomfortable.
I just Googled it. It was 4 years after Columbine. So it's far enough away that it wouldn't have been like, damn, they just published this.
Yeah.
But not so far that it's like an everyday occurrence in America. So
to lighten the mood a little bit.
What I did like in the
college scene with Gordon, other than him taking on that cop role right away again, was that there is definitely a student who has enrolled in that class just because Jim Gordon, ex-police commissioner, is teaching it, and he is just a little Batman fanboy, and is like, can you ask about Batman? He's like, yeah, no.
Would that be you, Jake?
Stop it.
He's got, like, Batman stickers on his binder and everything. Yeah. It's adorable. Yeah.
Very nice. What did you... I did like that we get the Joker at the slab in Antarctica. That he's still hanging out down in that prison.
He's like, what? I've been here for weeks in this cell. Like, yeah, you've definitely been out running around. But, yeah, Batman has Jim pull some strings to get a one-on-one time with Joker in the yard. Mm-hmm. And Joker's like, I'll tell you what's going on, but you got to fight with me. Like, I'm so bored. Like, I need something to happen. And so they, like, Batman just, you know, knocks him around a little bit because Batman's got to get his rocks off too. So I thought that, and that was the majority of that issue. Like, it was
right. Yeah. It was pretty much Joker's just a distraction for it.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And you come to find out that it's what Sloan wanted and that he had a little bit of pull in getting that to happen. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it was good Joker. It was well written. It was Joker being intelligent and scary at the same time. And I think that's the right way to write
when Joker is bored.
Yes.
He can be very humorous and scary and intelligent all at the same time, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I like a bored Joker. That's interesting. Have to think back to some of the other stories and be like, what was his state of mind at that point?
Well, and he reveals that he even got bored with the Rogues team up. He's like, that never works when we try that. Like,
I did
it wasn't
love that.
Going to work. There was, so I fucked it up.
There was a bit of like an Almost Got Him feel, like the first time they were all around a table together. Mm-hmm. Almost Got Him being the episode of the cartoon where they're all like playing poker or whatever.
That we've never talked about before.
You never know how our listeners are listening to these things.
Big rock.
So do you guys think that, like, how much, I'm focusing on Strange Things apparently, but how much of this book never being read by you, Jake, or it never being in its own trade paperback, how much do you think that has to do with Hush? Like, do you think Hush just totally overshadowed it because of the art? Do you think Hush totally overshadowed it because of the way it was advertised?
Yes.
So
all of those.
This was coming out at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So How many issues was this?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Is it the back half? Is it the middle? Is it the early half? Like, what is the overlap,
actually? I mean, I would think if Hush came out a couple... Let's say Hush came out a couple months ahead, right? Maybe the reactions they're getting or the sales. I mean, if they're... Say they both came out January. I don't know. If they both... You know, they've got reports on how many issues are selling. What are the feedback? What's that like? They're going to put their money... Yeah, if they're telling the story and this is what Detective is going to be for the next
people
6 months.
People are liking this big crossover.
So we're gonna put more attention into that. It's going to be the bigger thing.
So
or
it was
the talent just came together.
Mm-hmm.
It was only about 4 months after Hush started. So it was like right
okay,
in
so
the middle.
Okay, so Hush was big.
Oh,
so
Hush
people might have bought the first
yeah.
issue and be like, meh, it's not Jim Lee.
It could have been. You're right.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get a lot of new... Hush got a lot of new Batman readers.
Well, and it's Ed Brubaker, who is
author.
Author, yeah. It's a constant writer on Batman titles right now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so Jeff Loeb coming with Jim Lee to do Hush was a big deal. It's this powerhouse team showing up. Brubaker is very good, but he's also... on the monthly Batman titles already. There wasn't a lot of fanfare built around it.
Right.
And if you read, I mean, even like the Young Justice issues and stuff we were reading recently, like they all had ads for Hush, for Batman issues. Like that was the thing DC was pushing. They put all of their marketing budget into it, and this one was left behind a little bit. If you take Hush out of the program, this fits into continuity better than Hush does.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't think Hush fits into continuity.
It didn't where it's at, but it does
Correct.
Over the course of its lifetime.
It plays a bigger... Which is crazy. It has a bigger impact on the stories with
Story
Jason.
Story and characters down the road.
Correct.
Yeah.
But it doesn't go right now. Especially with all the Selena stuff.
Well, and I'm glad you just said that because I was about to say the same thing. There is a look in here where Batman and Selena, she gets a piece of information for him and then offers him backup. And he's like, no, I'm good. And as he's flying off, he's like, but thanks. And I'm like, that's not Batman outside of the Hush relationship.
Yeah.
Like that was a nice little throwback to maybe they were pulling from what was going on in Hush and be like,
good catch.
This is what Batman and Catwoman's relationship is building towards. And it's not being explored anywhere else except this.
Yeah, that was right before he visits Joker.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, obviously he doesn't want to take her with him because, he's not going to risk his little cat.
Meow.
Kind of a big...
Meow, 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 meow. I was just going to...
I think it plays a part in the character. And we have not given a lot of time to Lucius Fox in this podcast. It's hard to find the right stories that are about him.
Mm-hmm.
In this, he is recovering. He's just out of a coma. He had a stroke in Gotham Knights issue 23, which was during the Sasha Bardot storylines. He had a massive stroke and has been in a coma since, and this is where he comes out of it. He struggles to recover, and it is a part of his character for a while going forward, so... Just something I'd point out.
Is that what they do when they don't know what to do with a character? They're in a coma.
They have a stroke.
Let's just put them over there.
Well, he hired Sasha.
He's on life support until we know what to do with him.
They needed to get rid of him so she didn't have anybody to report to about how weird and strange Bruce was behaving all the time. So.
True.
Oh, so he got fridged?
Yeah, he got fridged.
Temporarily.
Interesting.
Until they thaw him.
I want to say an Arnold ice pun, and I can't think of anything right now.
There was a lot of, not just the Paul Sloan throwback, Batman goes and finds a guy in a retirement home named Mark Merlin, who is somebody that Penguin went to find. He is from an old, like a Golden Silver Age, House of Secrets, issue 23. He's like a supernatural detective.
Really?
He hung around in a lot of detective books back in the era.
That dude's name now.
And they brought him back for this issue. Like, it's kind of... I really like when the artists or the writers are such a fan of the universe that they're in, that they want to put these like nods to old things and bring stuff back.
Is this
like that,
the like gray ghost feeling thing?
Yeah, kind of, yeah, like that. Yeah,
that's what I was getting the vibe of. They were being like vague about it. I was like, is this gray ghost?
Maybe.
So I want to get on Jake's soapbox for a minute, because there was a line in here I did not care for, but it is all just character driven. It's not like anything politically or correctness.
So it's not a soapbox.
It's not a soapbox. No.
It's just Jake talking.
It's just Jake complaining.
It's Jake's comic boxes that he's standing on.
He would never.
I would
his
never.
Packing boxes.
I don't know. I have some pretty sturdy ones. So they.
But are they waterproof?
It is all about the rogues for the whole time. And a lot of like Montoya and other characters refer to them as the freaks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's used quite a bit, which is fine. I get the Gothamites might view the costume villains in such a way. What I didn't like is when Batman goes to Gordon and talks to him in their garden and they have a nice little bro moment. Batman calls them the freaks. And I feel like that is extremely anti-Batman. It's not the right characterization of how he views them. Because he would not do... Because
he's one of them.
He is one of them. And he does believe that they are sick and that they need his help, and they're still above some level of dignity that they, you know, he has to protect them. He saves several of them throughout this, right? Like,
that's fair.
I did not like him calling them freaks, and I don't think I'd ever want to see him do it again.
Yeah, that's
fair. I don't think I caught that. What do you know what issue it was?
It is the second to the last one, according to the way I mark my notes. But it, yeah, it's him and Gordon in the garden and talking, and it's just one line. He just says it once, and it doesn't seem slanderous or mean necessarily, but it just feels like a word that
very
he
casual for something he wouldn't say.
He would not say it that way.
Nice catch.
I didn't like it.
No, that's interesting. I didn't see that, but
now I'm going to be on the lookout for all these issues if you ever see.
Sick all these freaks.
I agree. I don't think he would.
No, because he definitely is one.
So we get to the last issue has Scarecrow, and he's like, somehow, like, just seems so convenient. He had saved Sloan back in the day, back when they're trying to, like, I guess from Joker probably beating him or
Two-Face torturing him to death.
But he accidentally blocked the dude's ability to experience fear. Oops.
Yeah.
Is it actually an accident?
So I read it as accidentally. Yeah, that he actually
blocked it.
Which revealing that in the last issue didn't do anything for that character, right? Like, he escapes Scarecrow's prison by jumping off a cliff into the water because he wasn't afraid of the fall. And
right. It was just kind of weird.
Other than like Sloan jumping off a couple rooftops and like swinging, which is not normal behavior for an ex-actor.
Sure.
Like, unless I didn't get any reason for him to not be afraid.
Like, it didn't just the fact that like he's going up against these freaks, these like costume characters.
And Batman, and he's playing everybody, and he's just doing what he wants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whim of
But also, it's just such a way to write off characterization. It's like, oh, it's a supernatural thing. It's a fear gas thing versus like it's just something about his personality.
Well, and he already had his gimmick, right? He's this ex-actor who loved to do monster movies and was like extreme into I said it earlier, what is it when you fall into the role so far?
Method acting.
Yeah. Thank you. But he was also really good with makeup, right? Like, we've seen him disguise himself.
You can't take makeup that fast.
It's so good it even deceives Batman, right? And so like,
ooh, Batman should have just hired him, put him in the cave with Harold and just let him make his makeup for him.
And then they both come out and be like, which is the rear, Harold?
No!
And Batman just calls them both freaks. And it ends scene.
Yeah, that could have happened, Jake. That definitely could have been a storyline. I meant that he was making like the matches Malone.
The Hunchback in Notre Dame.
Yes, like, that's true. That's true. Very true. Sure. All right. Any other thoughts?
I'm not a man. I am a hunchback.
Whoa! I was doing the penguin.
Well, let me change what we learned here today.
Nope.
Aaron, I do agree. I wrote down that the firefight was in that last issue was actually kind of hard to figure out what was going on. It was all just black and yellow.
Yeah.
I thought if you had given some separation in that color, it would have been quite a bit easier to read that whole thing. So, but it was good. That part was okay. It, like any of these things, like you invest so much time in the mystery and the discovering that sometimes the climax can be a little bit lackluster, and it's like, okay, well, you're gonna end it like every other superhero story. Somebody's gonna be hanging from the balcony, they're gonna be dangling, you're gonna have to choose if you do this or stop the villain or something like that. And like some of the cliches that, I mean, they're cliche because they keep happening, and I didn't think that it maybe stuck the landing as strong. I guess that's my review, is I enjoyed it quite a bit, but I don't think that it stuck the landing quite as well as the rest of the strength of the story had been. I was invested in it. I love a Rogues book, and one that's it's hard to introduce a new character. And if you give one that the villains are getting afraid of, but only because it's worse than Batman, I don't know. I liked it. It was good.
I enjoyed it. Like, I agree with what you said. I like that they brought Gordon back. I think that's a good way to get him back. I like that the Rogues villains are all kind of scared of something that you don't know quite what's going on. And I mean, apart from Batman saying freaks or whatever, I thought he was better in this than some of the things. We didn't mention it, but we had Batgirl just lurking behind him in one panel of one page in one of the first issues. Just like, as a little just tosser in there. She's still around. Don't worry. She's just still here. You know, I like the Joker aspects of it. And Two-Face is always a good story. And the pretending and stuff, I thought, wasn't bad. Was it good as Hush? No. I enjoyed it, though.
Yeah. It was perfectly fine. There were some good cliffhanger moments. I think the Penguin moment with Batman trying to save him probably might have been my favorite part in this. Like Jake said, I enjoy a good costume hero or costume villain team up that goes horribly awry. And yeah, I will probably never read it again. And I think the fact that it happened with Hush, like, I was so bought into Hush, like the marketing and my age and the art and everything, that this poor thing just did not have a chance.
No, that's fair.
When I don't know, like, we talked about it plenty, that this has a different place in timeline, and Hush now sticks out as such a piece of Batman's canon. This doesn't really have anything that moves anybody's story forward, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if Sloan, or what do they end up naming him at the end, the Charlatan, or...
Charlatan,
thank you. If that character showed up two or three more times, then maybe this story is a little bit more important because it becomes an origin story.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But this doesn't progress anybody's personal stories at all.
No.
It has some good moments, but all in all, it's probably not a necessary read in the timeline, but it was enjoyable and I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
What's next, Jake? Or Aaron, should I say?
Yeah, Aaron, what are we reading next?
Oh, well, I picked out an Elseworlds book for us. It's Black Label, Superman versus Lobo. I'm sure it's going to be great.
That sounds really good.
I can't wait.
I'm excited.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Maybe.
I'm sure I'll hate Once it I and you'll it, both love it so yeah. much.
I'm sure that's exactly what will happen.
Probably what will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well. Thank you guys for listening.
Wow. What did we learn, Aaron?
Oh, fuck.
I messed you up by throwing him the what's next.
It's that time again.
To do another one of our cute little skits?
No. It's time to learn the day's lesson. And to find out what it is, we turn to the Wheel of
Batman.
Wheel of
Batman.
Turn. Tell us the lesson that we should learn.
Well, we learned a few things, but I won't mention the last one we learned. But we learned the definition for FUBAR. It's a fucking ugly bitch-ass raccoons.
Or big-ass raccoons.
Oh, big-ass raccoons, yeah, depending on your mood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's big-ass raccoons.
Now you can end it, Jake.
Well, for the Brotherhood of Batman, I'm Jake. Thank you guys for listening.
I'm Aaron. I'm the oldest out of us. I'll clean it up. Bye.
I'm Ben. Thank you for not listening. Bye.
Weirdo.
But let me ask you something. What do you think of this? Say it's
all right. That was terrible. Right. Horrendous. I'm offended. I'm it's appalled. All right.
That was
awesome. It's all right.
Whoa, yes.
It's all right. Yes. No!